Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. What she discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, my dog, Phoebe, is the queen of our house, and I can tell you that her health is extremely important to us. She is a part of our family. I watched the video, y'all, and I was amazed by the things I didn't know that could impact your dog's health. This 20-minute video is packed full of tips that I've already started with my dog, Phoebe. I'm noticing more energy, healthier skin and coat. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/RLRC and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/RLRC.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Y'all going to be getting this one a little bit late today. Normally, the opposite. Midnight on Tuesday, but shit happens. But it's not Envision Podcast Studios' fault. It's Woody Overton's fault. But you're gonna enjoy it anyway. Shout out to Leah Marie for giving me the information on this one. Leah, you rock. And I'm gonna name the title of this episode: National Serial Killer. So Stay tuned at the end of the show for, as always, for Real Life, Real Crime announcements. And hey, y'all, if you go back and resubscribe through Apple iTunes, and you'll get everything that we release. You'll get it downloaded on your phone. They changed some stuff, so make sure you do that, because you might not be getting the automatic downloads anymore. Just check it and make sure you're still signed up. All right, I'm going to tell you about this dude. And this dude is an original badass, okay? Robert Carl Hohenberger. Yeah, he was born in 1943 on May 31st. And, you know, in South Louisiana, certain parts, like Morgan City, and this dude's name still scares people who were alive, and at least until 1978, or who were born at least, you know, by 1978. So Robert Carl Hohenberger, like I said, it's a name that still strikes fear in the old hearts and minds of St. Mary Parish residents who are more than a few decades old. Now, y'all, St. Mary Parish is way down south, and, you know, it's oil country and seafood country and stuff like that. And we'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. So I'm going to skip around because it's a lot that I need to tell you about this. But Hohenberger was probably the first serial killer ever in Morgan City, Louisiana. Now, again, Morgan City, y'all, it's a big, big oil industry. They service a lot of the rigs offshore. And, it's just or it's also big in the area of Louisiana and seafood and everything else. But the Hohenberger, you know, No one knows what caused him, start killing, but he was actually a California volunteer police officer, right? And that's common in serial killer cases. These guys like John Wayne Gacy and stuff, they like have put themselves in public positions, and so they can use their authority to get their victims, right? So no one knows what caused this California volunteer police officer to victimize and kill teenagers in Louisiana, though. But one thing is for certain, the families of Hohenberger's victims will never know what drove him to come to South Louisiana and choose their loved ones to die in these horrific murders that he committed. But let me tell you about Robert Carl. He's a one-time sheriff's deputy. But y'all, check this out. I don't understand this. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The one-time sheriff's deputy was accused of kidnapping a serial rapist and a prime suspect in a series of murders committed against teenagers in Morgan City, Louisiana, between March and May of 1978. Now, y'all, that he didn't just start in Louisiana. He started out in California. We'll get to that in a minute. But the FBI was brought in to help the investigation of the killings, and they put Hohenberger on the national wanted list, okay? But before he got arrested, guess what the little bitch did? He committed suicide, but more on that to come. But, yeah, y'all, you know, not much is known about Hohenberger in his early years, and he was born in Indiana in 1943. And his family then left the state, and they moved to Riverside County, California. And in the mid-1960s, he signed on to be an auxiliary police officer. And y'all, that's like, you know, the part-timers, and it's a voluntary deal, and you're unpaid. But the police departments love to use people like this, you know, to catch the bullshit calls and have a bigger presence on the street and stuff like that. And these are the guys who you normally have a regular job, and they do it because they love it and they want the action of it, right? But when he was a volunteer cop, y'all, his duties included patrolling the streets in his free time from his main job, as well as monitoring the protections of citizens' rights and public order, okay? So he's got a badge and he's helping protect and serve, or so you think. So he used his official position and he began to carry out attacks on young girls and women. And in 1966, he was arrested on charges of assaulting women. Now, y'all remember assault outside of the state of Louisiana is the unwanted touching. In Louisiana, the assault is a threat of. But, y'all, he was arrested on charges of assaulting women who he had raped at gunpoint. Okay? So they take him, they get him, they arrest him and take his ass to trial. And guess what? He was convicted. But as in so many cases, you know, some of the charges were later dropped after a plea deal was made, in which the plea deal was made because it said both parties had reconciled. Or, you know, and the victim said that she and Robert had made amends and he received a minor sentence and was released 2 years later. Well, he gets out. He's not hanging around Riverside County anymore, okay? He moves to Orange County, California. And in 1971, he was arrested in Laguna Beach for kidnapping two more girls at gunpoint, y'all. And guess what? They take his ass to trial. And now this time, they got him, right? But, you know, he was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment. But, and I don't get this because I guess it's so long ago, but he's sentenced to life imprisonment, but he had a right to a parole hearing after 6 months. Now, what kind of fucking sentence does that make? It doesn't. But they ship his ass to probably California's worst prison at the time, San Quentin. And by the time 1974 rolls around, which is like 3 years later, he's you know, not letting his time do him. He's doing the time. He's a model prisoner. And he gets transferred from the max security cell block to a cell with less security. And guess what happened? In April of 1974, he escaped from San Quentin, y'all. All right? So, he played nice. He did his shit, and he escapes from San Quentin, just one of the most notorious prisons ever, besides Bloody Angola. But after he escaped, just run and hide and be a good boy? No. The first thing he does, he kidnapped 20-year-old Richard Dubois and his wife, Victoria. And look, he held him at gunpoint, and he forced them to take him to Modesto, California, where he wanted to go to his friend's house. Well, guess what? He's been down for a moment. And when they get to Modesto, he can't find his friend's house, right? So then he demands that Dubois take him to Los Baños, right? While they were refueling the car at a gas station, evidently it's a ways away, or they ran out of gas or were about to run out of gas, but they're refueling the car, and Richard and his wife hauled ass, okay? And I mean, I don't know what this asshole Hohenberger's thinking, but somehow they get away from him, and what do? They call 911. And so all the cops come out, and they're looking for him. They know the car that Hohenberger's in, and guess what? A few hours later, they found him, and they took him down to gunpoint. They captured him, and they booked him into the local jail, and then he was extradited back to Marion County, which is where San Quentin is, y'all. And time goes on, and he is found guilty of escaping from San Quentin, right? So in August of 1977, though, God, I don't understand these fucking timelines. I don't understand how people go down for life and you escape, but and then still in 1977, he was paroled, okay? And guess what he did? He went back home to Riverside County. Now, while he's there, he began to commit crimes, you know, because he needed money, obviously. And in October 1977, he once again shows his true colors, and he abducts a girl from Palm Desert. And then, guess what he did, y'all? He beat her and he raped her over and over again. But he left her alive. And the victim survived. And she reported it once again, the attack to police. So, and in the following months, the victim identified Hohenberger after a series of mugshots of sex offenders were shown to her. And guess what? She picks him out of the mugshots and they get a warrant for his arrest. And they put him on the national wanted list. Okay. Back then, they didn't have the NCIC computer, a National Crime Information Computer, where you put it in automatically and, you know, you can pull up everything in the world. But they did have a national wanted list. So he's put on that, and guess what? He found out about it. How? I don't know. He was like, fuck it. I'm not going to stay in California anymore. And in January of 1978, he hauls ass, okay? In doing so, when he left California, he escaped the police. And guess where he traveled? All the way to South Louisiana. Now, I don't know how you get from California and pick a town in South Louisiana, other than this would have been during the oil boom. And I guess he figured he could come down here and get work. So he comes down to Bayou Vista, Louisiana, which is a very small town, y'all, around Morgan City. But he starts using the name of Frank Henry Green, okay? And like I said, the offshore business is booming, and, you know, everything's got to be taken care of, from the ships to all the pipes that goes offshore and everything else. And everybody needs hands to work. You know, you got good workers and you got bad workers. But Hohenberger found a job working and living, which is common back then. Y'all have, they have man camps in if you work in the oil industry, they'll house you and you work all day long, 12 hour shifts, and you get a hot, three hots and a cot. So, but he found a job at R&M Service Incorporated, which was a supplier for welding equipment. And again, that would have been related to the oil field work. So, you know, he probably, I don't know if they worked 7 on, 7 off, like to do offshore, or 14 on, 14 off, but he had some off time. And so what does he do in his off time? He starts going to Morgan City, which is close to Bayou Vista and was probably the biggest city down there that was close to where he was. And he starts spending his off time in Morgan City, and guess what happened? Five teenagers began to actually disappeared from the area, right? Mysteriously. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. So the first young girl to go missing was 16-year-old Mary Lee, not confused with Maria Lee, who gave me the story. But Mary Lee Rotterman, and she disappeared on March the 2nd, after going to a store to shop. In a few hours after she disappeared, her parents were called on the phone, y'all. There's no cell phones, no internet, none of that shit, no caller ID. Her parents get a phone call, and the dude's like, I got Mary, and I kidnapped her, and I want $5,000 to give her back to you. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? He was like, you don't believe me? So he puts Mary on the phone. And Mary's told her parents, she's like, I've been kidnapped, but I'm okay. And, you know, even though he said, don't call the police, they hang up and the Rottermans call the police immediately. But she was never found, y'all. And her kidnapper was never found, right? So disappeared in a small, small town. I bet you Morgan City had never had anything like this happen. And time marches on. On April 27th, a 19-year-old by the name of Bridget Cantrell Sons and a 17-year-old Gordon Mark Canella, they went missing. They were at a grocery store in Morgan City. And there was a robbery that took place. And during the robbery, these two come up missing. Okay. So the police investigate shit out of it. And what did they find? They found Bridget's purse and an unfinished cigarette and her car that was in the parking lot. Okay. And it still had her cigarettes in it. Okay. So that evidently he robbed a store. He comes out, abducts them from the car. Nothing ever happened, y'all. Didn't find them yet. Then, just a few weeks later, on May the 11th, they had a 15-year-old Judy Adams and 14-year-old Bertha Gold went missing after they attended the Central Catholic High School Fair in Morgan City. Now, look, South Louisiana, you got a fair in every town and church fairs and everything else. It's a big part of our culture. And so these two young, beautiful girls, 15 and 14 years old, they go to the fair. They're going to have a good time. You know, look, you didn't have kidnappings and shit back then. People were still hitchhiking, and your parents didn't worry about you. I was probably close to their age. You know, your parents didn't worry about you. They just let you go. So, but they came up missing. They didn't come home. And the cops are looking at them, and they're like, we think they're runaways, right? But at the further they dug into it, now, and you remember, they got these other missing kids that are already happened. The further they dug into it, they were like, holy shit. They found a witness that saw the two girls getting into a car driven by an unknown white man. But the witness was able to get the license plate. And the cops from the registration of the car, and the car comes back to a guy named Frank Green, whose identity they really found by the fingerprints, right? And it just comes up, and now, you know, Hohenberger is obviously using Frank Green as an alias. So during the police investigation, they find out where Frank Green / Hohenberger is living, and they go to his neighbor. It's a guy by the name of Sidney Harris, and he's 38 years old. And they interrogate the shit out of him, like, who lives here, da-da-da-da-da. And he didn't help him at all. He played hardball with them, et cetera. And they leave, and guess what Sidney Harris does? He contacted Hohenberger. Now, remember, there was no cell phones. I don't know how he did it. It must have been face-to-face. But he told him, he said, hey, bro, cops are here looking for you. And they're asking about those two girls. What does Hohenberger do? Again, he runs like a little bitch. So when the cops find out, and they're going to keep coming back around, et cetera, they find out that Sidney Harris actually warned Hohenberger. Well, 10-15, his ass. They lock him up. And they charged him with accessory after the fact and harboring a fugitive, meaning like he helped him get away. Okay. And then listen to this. This is 1978. He was arrested and they gave him a $250,000 bond. In 1978, that's like a $250 million bond today. But they had suspicions that he might have helped Hohenberger because it's kind of hard to kidnap two kids and rape them and do all that stuff. They had suspicions that he helped Hohenberger or whatever his name that he's going by now in the kidnappings and rape of these kids, but they were never able to prove it. But on May the 26th, the bodies of the two girls were found in a sewage system of Bayou Vista, not far from where Hohenberger worked. And their bodies tragically showed signs of abuse and strangulation. And again, they were identified as Bridget Sons and Judy Adams. So now, you know, Morgan City's like in oh shit mode. Like, we don't have this. This doesn't happen. And now we got other ones that are missing. We just found these two beautiful young girls with broken necks or strangled to death and signs of sexual abuse. But on the very next day, all right, they're in oh shit mode anyway, right? It doesn't happen, oh shit mode. And on the next day, on May 27th, Gordon Canella's body was found in a field with a rope tied around his neck, and he had been strangled to death by the rope. Just absolutely very personal crime and one of the worst ways to go. When you strangle someone, it goes to the point where they can't breathe naturally and they get the burst blood vessels in their eyes, petechia hemorrhaging, and that's personal, y'all. I mean, you got to be up close and personal to do this. So now they're in old shit mode. Now they're calling all the cops from surrounding agencies. And remember, there was no NCIC computer system. So they're calling all the cops in, the state police in, and everybody, and the volunteers come in. Because you know you got these bodies now, right? And so they all start to look around for more bodies. Remember, you still got these other kids missing. So, look, they searched all the abandoned buildings and the fields and the woods and the swamps and the sewers in an attempt to find the other teenagers that were missing. They even brought out divers, y'all. And, of course, down there, look, in Morgan City, you're surrounded by water. If it's not lakes and swamps and this bayous that go out to the Gulf and all that, they bring in the divers. And they searched the rivers and the lakes and all the waterways, but never found anything, okay? So now they got Hohenberger again. They know it's him, and they put him back on the prime suspect list, that national wanted list. And all the small towns and the cities that are surrounding Morgan City are put on alert, and that would include it Bayou Vista. So what does Hohenberger do? He hauls ass. I mean, he knows it's too hot from there. He knows he's got bodies on him, and he jets. Now, this time, he takes that same car that came back registered him from the robbery, and it's a 1970 Valiant, and most of y'all don't even know what that is. But that's the car he was driving, and he drives all the way across country again, but not to California this time. This time, he goes to Tacoma, Washington, all right? And when he's in Tacoma, he was like, fuck it, I don't have any money. I need to sell my car. And, of course, the car had, the 1970 Valiant had Louisiana license plates. So he puts out an ad in the newspaper. Again, there was no online. There's no Vroom or Vroom.com or any of this shit says you have to take out an ad in a local newspaper and say, hey, I'm selling my shit. So one of the guys that was interested, shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
My allergies are throwing my whole morning off. Do I sound different to you?
I love it. You sound like, it's that time of year there, bro.
I sound different to me. I feel like I'm in a submarine.
Yeah, well. Have you tried Astapro? It's faster, bro. Oh. Right? Astapro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Hey, I use this, and you should too, Jim. Last weekend, I planted my garden, and it's that time of the year, and my allergies really kicked up with it, right? I use Astapro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I'm back in the game, down on those rows, planting my stuff.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. It's faster, bro. Uses directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Astapro and go.
Looking for a new and healthier way to unwind? I was too, and then I tried Recess Mood. Recess Mood replaced that after-dinner alcoholic beverage for me, so I saw a difference in both my mood and my belly. It's made with real fruit, It is only 20 calories and it contains no added sugar. Recess Mood is infused with functional ingredients like mood-lifting magnesium and stress-balancing adaptogens, so you can relax without the alcohol or the hangovers. Recess Mood tastes great, too, and comes in four different flavors. My favorite flavor is the strawberry rose. So whether you need a moment away from the errands, work, and kids, or you just need a moment to chill during dinnertime chaos, Recess Mood is where it's at whenever you need to relax and unwind. You deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/RLRC and get 15% off Recess Mood, your go-to alcohol replacement.
Sitting in the car was a guy named Erling Marvick. But, y'all, Erling Marvick was not only a cop, he was an experienced cop. He was a lieutenant. Now, he had no idea what he was getting into. He just thought it was a great price on the car, and he contacts Hohenberger and was like, can I come look at your shit? And Hohenberger's like, yep. So he goes over there and looks at the car. And let me back up. Marvick was not, he was very experienced, and he was the head of the Tacoma Police Internal Affairs Division, right? So, and it was a Tuesday that he answered the ad for the used car. And so he shows up dressed in plain clothes. It was like me when I worked for the state police, plain clothes, undercover shit. And I was attached to internal affairs, but story for another day. So he shows up to meet Hohenberger at his apartment, and Hohenberger lived in like a shitty section of Tacoma. It was run down, but it's an industrial section, like he's doing the odd jobs in Morgan City, et cetera. People need workers, right? But he shows up at the shitty apartment in the shitty side of town, and he goes to look at the car. Now he meets Hohenberger. And his spidey senses go off, and he's like, something's not right with this cat. And he actually said, I felt there was something rather suspicious about the situation. It was a Louisiana car, and Hohenberger was living alone here, and he said, hey, dude, I'm broke. I need to sell my car. So Marvick's like, I just knew something was not right. Something was out of place. So what does he do? The next morning when he goes into work, and all old cops are guilty of this, he used which would have been a brand new computer system at the time, to run Hohenberger's license plate, Louisiana license plate, remember? And, you're not supposed to do that, but fuck it, we've all done it. And he gets the printout on the car, y'all, and it comes back registered to a Frank Henry Green, which is... I told you that one of the aliases that Hohenberger used in Morgan City. And he had been in Morgan City up until 2 weeks before when he hauled ass. Okay. So Marvick's like, holy fuck. And then they run in Frank Henry Green, and Hohenberger comes up. Frank Henry Green is one of his aliases. And he's like, holy fuck, this dude's wanted for murder and out of California and kidnappings and all this shit. And now he's wanted for all these bodies in Morgan City. He's a fucking serial killer. And remember, serial killers are defined as a person who kills two or more people in unrelated incidents. Hohenberger's got like 8-9 bodies on him in 1978, y'all. Okay. Imagine how many more he had traveling cross country it was sexual for him. He kidnapped these girls and he raped them and he murdered them. So how many people do you think he murdered in small town America when he's driving across country in a back cross country, that these cases are still unsolved, right? Because he's transient coming through and it'd been almost impossible to solve them. Anyway, so back to Marvick, it's like, holy fuck, I mean, this is a bad dude. So he assembles a team of plainclothes officers and they go stake out Hohenberger's apartment. So Marvick's like, okay, everybody's in place. And he said, what I'm going to do? I'm going to call this cat and be like, I'm really interested in your car. Can you come back outside and show it to me again? So he gets there and he knocks on the door and he's like, hey, bro, you know, I'm going to look at the car again. And Hohenberger's, all right. So he walks out of the apartment. And when he walks out, Marvick gave the prearranged signal to the other cops and they swamp dunk him, right? They come in and they tackle him and they go to the ground. Right, as they're trying to tackle him, he tries to take off running. I'm sorry. And they were trying to wrestle on the ground. And somehow, during the middle of this, all these cops on top of him, bam, gun goes off. Right. And Marvick is like, fuck, I didn't see a gun. We were scuffling. We were taken to the ground. And I didn't see a gun. But it turned out that Hohenberger had a .22 pistol that he was able to pull out while they're taking him to the ground to arrest him. All right. And he shot his own self in the head because he's a little bitch. Now, remember, he's been San Quentin and everything else, life sentences, but he knows he's going to get the death penalty in the state of Louisiana for the murders that he did. So they're in like, oh, shit mode. You know, I know they didn't know he was armed. They're in oh, shit mode. They call the ambulance, and they take him to St. Joseph Medical Center, and they rush him in for surgery for his brain, and you know, they come out, they get the bullet out and everything, and they put him in recovery. But you know what? He had complications. And he ultimately ended up dying, okay? And during the autopsy, which I've told y'all about 1,000 times how that works, they were able to determine that it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound and went into his brain. And it's kind of strange. I've never heard this one before, but the actual cause of death listed on the autopsy report was death by gunshot to avoid arrest. And I don't know if he was going to try to kill all the cops or he just actually did shoot himself, you know, whatever. Now he's dead as fuck, and it's listed as death by gunshot to avoid arrest. So remember, though, this dude's on this national wanted list. He's the baddest motherfucker that they've got going. And so when you get put on that national list, naturally the FBI assigns agents to it. And the FBI agents in Seattle, which is close to Tacoma, saw all the outstanding warrants that Hohenberger had, which included the first-degree murder and kidnapping charges in Louisiana, and the rape and kidnapping and sex perversion charges in California. And I would think that term is probably changed by nowadays, but he was a bad dude, right? So, but they had to look into him. Now, this is when the beginning of profiling comes in. They studied these bad guys and their histories and everything, and they try to put together a list of things and match it against other serial killers. And they try to figure out profiles and, you know, shit that makes these guys tick. So they're investigating Hohenberger and everything that he's ever done. And they found out that he had been in Tacoma since May the 23rd. And of course he was using the alias Frank Harris, which actually is the third alias he had. And anyway, he was going around and he was looking for work using the alias Frank Harris. And the FBI keeps investigating. And during the search, they learned that Hohenberger had got an apartment. And in the apartment, there was a 12-gauge shotgun that Hohenberger had stolen from a welding shop where he worked in Morgan City, Louisiana. And he also had several knives. So when he hauled ass cross country because he knew he was one in Louisiana, he took a shotgun. I don't know where he got the knives from, but they were able to prove the shotgun actually came from that welding shop where he had his job. So the FBI studies him, and they list these things about him. They said all his crimes were that the motive was sex, okay? And the for the slayings he committed, and it was all about sex. The murders he committed, it was all about sex. And they found that Hohenberger's entire life since he escaped from prison, he was a drifter, right? Not escape, when they released. Remember, I told you he got out like 6 months or some bullshit after he's escaped already and he goes back in. I don't get that. But anyway, so go back to Louisiana and Morgan City, and it's still small by Louisiana city standards today. The council, the city council is all pissed off that this was able to happen. But you got to remember, it's the oil industry. You get all these transients and people without education to come down there, and they're trying to find jobs in the oil field, which usually pay very well, especially if you don't have an education. So the city council is pissed, and they actually passed an ordinance requiring all transients, anybody that came down there looking for a job, they had to register and have their fingerprints taken by the police. And this was an effort to discourage the criminal elements from coming down here to look for a job. Okay. So, but no matter how much they investigated y'all, they couldn't find out what or why Hohenberger did the things he did or what the motives were other than the sex. Okay. Like the guy that he kidnapped, I don't know if he had sex with him, but he was just strangled to death and memories found separate from the other bodies. But Doug Roderman remembers the fear and the terror that St. Mary Parish felt that year when Hohenberger had killed the five teenagers, y'all. Five in a city of just a couple thousand people. And Roderman said, he remembers that people were scared to death and they wouldn't leave their homes without a weapon and, you know, to go to the school or a store or anything without something to protect themselves, whether it's a knife or a pistol or whatever. And so and the same guy, Doug Roderman, was just 17 years old when his little sister, Mary Leah Roderman, had disappeared on her way to the drugstore. Remember, I told y'all about her. And so he said, after that night, he never saw his sister again. And guess what, y'all? To this day, her body's never been found. Roderman, the brother, goes on to say, everybody was pretty much afraid to go out in the evenings. And he said his parents moved to Houston soon after Mary Lee's disappearance. And for the 3 or 4 months that Hohenberger was in St. Mary Parish, it was sheer terror. Another guy, Duval Arthur, who was a St. Mary Parish detective and a police chief in Berwick. Now, Berwick is one of those outlying towns for Morgan City, y'all. Again, super, super small. Not common for the police chief to do double duties as a detective and investigator. And I don't know how many officers they have now, but it's still a very small force. And back then, he might have been the lone wolf, if you will. Maybe he had a Barney Fife and did some patrolling. But anyway, he was a police chief now and a tech, but he had been a policeman before. And he knew what it took to get control of someone, and he had that advantage. And the theory is that Hohenberger was using his California police badge to lure these unsuspecting teenagers in, right? Hey, showing them a badge out the window, say, come on, get in the car, take a ride, whether he threatened them or whatever he did, he did it. And Duval Arthur is one that came up. He's like, hey, this guy had a badge, and he had to be getting these kids in the vehicle somehow. And he was like, I'm pretty sure that he used his badge to get him in a car. And then he raped and murdered him, right? And Duval said he wasn't one of those that would hide what he did. He was very public, meaning Hohenberger was just fucking out the box. And he wasn't a tree jumper, if you will. He was, you know, someone who used that authority, or at one point authority that he had, but he just did it in broad daylight. And that is witnessed by the people that actually saw him get those kids in the car. And, y'all, there's a bunch of stuff on this guy. I'd never heard of him, but he's a badass. But let me read you this article, and it's pretty cool. It's about what happened to Hohenberger in the end, and it's dated Thursday, June the 1st, 1978, and by Aiken Standard. And said, big title says, police find fugitive while answering ad. And it says, Tacoma, Washington. Police Lieutenant Earl Marvick, shopping for a second car, answered a newspaper ad for a 1970 Valiant. Instead of buying a car, he found himself scuffling with an armed fugitive wanted on murder, rape, and kidnap charges. Robert Carl Hohenberger, wanted in Louisiana and in California, died late Wednesday of a bullet wound received during his arrest earlier in the day. Police said Hohenberger shot himself in the head with his own .22 revolver. Earl Averill, a spokesman for St. Joseph's Hospital, said Hohenberger lived for about 2.5 hours after doctors operated to remove bullet fragments from his brain. Marvick, head of the Tacoma Police Internal Affairs Office, said he answered an ad on Tuesday for a used car. Dressed in street clothes, Marvick, who had not identified himself as a policeman, visited the apartment where Hohenberger lived in the commercial industrial section of Tacoma. I felt there was something rather suspicious about the situation, Marvick said Wednesday. It was a Louisiana car. He was living alone here. Said he was broke. I just thought something must be out of place. Marvick ran a computer check on the car Wednesday morning and found it was registered to Frank Henry Green, an alias used by Hohenberger in Morgan City, Louisiana, where he did odd jobs from December until he disappeared about 2 weeks ago. Marvick returned to the apartment Wednesday to arrest Hohenberger, bringing with him several plainclothes police who waited out of sight while he approached the apartment. I told him I wanted to take a look at the car once more. He walked out of the apartment. I gave a pre-arranged signal, and others came in, said Marvick. I told him he was under arrest. He looked around and tried to run, tried to make a break. I grabbed him, wrestled him to the ground, and the gun went off. The lieutenant said he had not seen the gun before the scuffle, but knew from the teletype reports that the man was armed with a .22 revolver. FBI agent Ray Mathis in Seattle said warrants outstanding against Hohenberger, who's 35, included first-degree murder and kidnapping charges in Louisiana and rape, kidnap, and sex perversion charges in California. Hohenberger, a drifter originally from Indiana, was sought nationwide after the bodies of three teenagers were found in Morgan City late last week. Two in a cylindrical septic tank and another buried about 5 miles away. Hohenberger was wanted on charges of kidnapping and raping a California co-ed late last year, shortly after he was paroled from a California prison. He had served several terms for assault convictions. Hohenberg was working at a Morgan City welding shop under the name of Frank Green when he disappeared after two girls were abducted from a shopping center on May the 11th. Robert Carl Hohenberger, y'all, I can guarantee you he was the first serial killer ever in St. Mary Parish. And our prayers go out. I mean, it's been, 78, 88, 98, 2018. It's been like 26 years or 25 years, and I'm sure if you're a family member of one of these victims and you're listening, I just want you to know our hopes and prayers go out to y'all. Hohenberger, fucking monster, and a fine example of how you slip through the cracks and then you get arrested for these charges and they get downgraded and you get arrested again. Since San Quentin, you escape and do more charges and go back. I just fucking don't get it. But I had never heard of Hohenberger. And thank you again, Leah Marie. I think it's very interesting. I've worked extensively in these areas with the state police, and we'll get to those stories one day. And it's just horrible. So, first serial killer ever in St. Mary Parish, at least that on record. And I'm going to conclude this series, and I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. I want to, convicts and patrons, you just got your latest bonus episode released yesterday called Accidental? I hope you enjoyed it. It was just some shit that I had on my head. I've been thinking about, you know, I know it's a lot of stories mixed into one, but I hope you enjoy it, and I appreciate your support so much. If you want to become a patron or a convict, y'all, it's the same thing. It's or an Apple subscriber. Thank you, too. It's a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com and look up Real Life Real Crime, and we have a bunch of different tier levels of support where you get a bunch of free stuff, and, of course, you get early, except for this one, early commercial-free episodes, which you'll still get. And then you get the bonus episodes, which are locked up. I probably have like 20 of them now. If you like Real Life Crime originals, the old cop stories, and you know, just a bunch of other stuff. And the convicts are the same thing. There are subscribers through the Real Life Real Crime community app. Y'all, if you want to send me a message, send it to me there first, please, because I have all this other social media that sometimes I don't get to check for a week or two, and all these different messages. And I try to answer everyone that sends me something, okay, because I love and appreciate all of y'all. But convicts are the same thing as Patreon, but it's just through our app. And you can get yearly discounts and stuff like that. And there's different tier levels, convict being my affectionate term, for the subscribers. So go check it out. But in the app, y'all, is everything Real Life Real Crime, from our merch store to stories to chat groups and games. And you can imagine it. It's there, updated on cases and everything else, a lot more than you get on any of my other social media pages. TikTok, I hadn't even been posting on that in a couple of weeks, but I'm about to really kick it up to the next level. So y'all check out and follow me on TikTok at Real Life Real Crime. And remember, you got to go. I hate to do this because we've been building this for 6 years, but every once in a while, the podcast industry changes shit up, and it's never to the advantage of the podcaster. It's always so they can make more money through the commercials and all that. And unfortunately, it's a business. But make sure you resubscribe wherever you listen to Real Life Real Crime, the podcast, or Real Life Real Crime Daily, or just whatever app you use, scroll up and make sure that you're subscribed or hit the subscribe button, because if you don't, they're kicking everybody out and making us all start over again. But I want you to do it so you will always get the drop downloaded to your shit before you read about it, right? If you're not subscribed, then you can't get it. But anyway, check that out. And other things, you know, we still got a lot of big stuff coming, y'all. Yeah, go check out Bloody Angola, that the podcast Jim Chapman and I do. It drops every Thursday. We won best for the first time. We were nominated, and we won best history podcast in the world for that. Very different than Real Life Real Crime. Go check it out. Real Life Real Crime Daily drops 4 days a week. It's me and Mike and Jim doing the news stories and everything else. Pretty funny shit. Pretty serious shit. Go check it out. In LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, y'all know it's my jam. People, become an organ donor, okay? They're a nonprofit. They help these families. They help other people be the recipient of organ transplants. They save lives every day. And every organ donor, everybody that signs up as an organ donor is a hero. And the chances they're ever going to use your shit are slim to none. But you don't. If you're a lifer from India, you don't have to be from Louisiana. You can go to LOPA.org, sign up to be an organ donor. It takes about 2 minutes. And then you can give the gift of Life and Sight and all that other great shit that they do. And I'm Woody Overton, your host for Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time, or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, you run in zone, that's for sure.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.